Thanks to our old mole contributors and guests this morning, Bill Resnick, Victoria Law, Desiree Helgers, and Junior Goodall, and Joe Clement for being our engineer. This is Denise Morris checking out for this Monday, June 29th. Thanks for joining us.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10:01. Up next is Air Cascadia with news, commentary, and jiggery pokery with Chris Andre.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, June 29th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is none other than Yasmin Nair. You heard on the previous show some reference to her work and to her words, so it is more than a perfect match today, and we're delighted to welcome her. I've got a few headlines that I want to bring you. I'm going to either get those in at the end of the program, or we can otherwise put them up on the KBOO website. Just briefly, though, in Oklahoma, an injection well caught fire on Friday and exploded. The video is absolutely dramatic. Amazingly, no one was hurt. But, of course, that is the exception, not the rule in these events. And something we think about now, not later. Under the National Popular Vote Bill, the Electoral College would be reformed so that the presidential candidate who receives the most popular votes in all 50 states and D.C. will become president. It's about time. The National Popular Vote Bill has been flying mostly under the radar. It's time to talk about it now, not 2 weeks before the election. And Kevin Olaf pleads guilty to violating the ridiculous and probably unconstitutional Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. It's a law passed specifically to attack and silence people who would dare to stand up for other species. And the boomtown has always loomed large in the American imagination, but it makes a comeback in this age of overabundant U.S. oil and gas production. There's a new documentary out about the Bakken oil fields in the Dakotas and how that has changed overnight the whole culture and society of that part of the world, turning it into a madhouse inhabited visited by very sick and unhappy people. And a bipartisan delegation of U.S. senators was in Cuba on Friday to meet with top government officials, Senator Patrick Leahy leading the charge. And, of course, there's a lot more to have a look at. But right now, we have limited time and a lot to say. And I want to welcome Yasmin Nair to the KBOO Airways. Good morning, Yasmin. Thanks for being
Hello.
With us.
Hello, thank you for having me on here.
Well, your piece caught my attention, The Secret History of Gay Marriage. This is, you are, as far as I know, the only one who has taken up this topic, and it's terribly important to provide people, and in this case, my listeners and Cascadia, some context and a little bit of the deep structure that we are we're faced with. It's important if we want to strengthen the movement, if we want the whole community to be stronger, then understanding what Yasmin is writing about and what the actual secret history is terribly important and fascinating too. The secret history of gay marriage is that it was never a topic. I mean, I'm quoting, a topic of huge concern in the LGBTQ community until the rise of the mainstream gay organizations in the mid-90s. And she continues, here's what really happened. This is again part and parcel of the co-opting of grassroots movements by huge organizations that profit from taking up causes which really belong to the people and not to these huge organizations. Yes, so take us through the secret history of gay marriage, would you?
Sure, absolutely. You know, the well-known history of gay marriage is that it was some sort of it has been a grassroots movement taken up by people who just want to have their love affirmed, and it's millions of gays and lesbians storming into the streets demanding that their relationships be recognized and so on. All of that is, of course, utter bosh. Really, what happened is that in the mid-90s, we saw a depletion of political energy and psychic energy, really, after the AIDS crisis. There was a massive depletion of energy. And we also saw the kind of heightening, you know, neoliberalism had been, the privatization of resources in the United States in particular, had been going on since around the 70s. And we saw a real coalescence of that, especially in the 90s, around gay identity issues. And what we saw in the 90s was the rise of an extremely wealthy, increasingly much more out, gay and lesbian political economic class, which decided that marriage was the best way. And it is, in fact, you know, under the terms of capitalism, marriage, as we know, right, the family, yes, the sort of nuclear family, is in fact the best way to root capital, right? It is the best sort of motor of capitalism, really. And what we had were these gays and lesbians deciding that marriage would be the cause for the community. I'm simplifying a great deal. There were, you know, all these issues around the Hawaii case in 94 and so on. But essentially, it is about wealthy gays and lesbians deciding that marriage would become the cause. And it, you have groups like the Human Rights Campaign. Now, the other part of the secret history of gay marriage is that it has been well funded by extremely wealthy organizations. A lot of straight allies in particular tend to think that the gay marriage movement has been a grassroots, largely unfunded enterprise. But in fact, the Human Rights Campaign has an operating budget alone of around $40-50 million. It is the biggest gay and lesbian organization in the world, quite literally. So you had a lot of money being pumped into this campaign, which benefits mostly wealthy white and mostly white gays and lesbians. And that really is part of the secret history of gay marriage that nobody knows about. The other part, of course, is that there's the famous cases like the Edith Windsor case, for instance, which everyone thinks was about a poor little old lady sitting in New York, yes, you know, striking a match to keep herself warm, is in fact actually about a woman who just did not want to pay the taxes on her massive estate, really. Because no one has done the math on that. And the New York Times, as I point out in my article, deliberately worked to keep that part of it occluded, really. The fact is she's worth around $10 million. And so this was not about a poor little old lady trying to not pay taxes because that would devastate her. It's about a rather wealthy woman who said, why the hell should I bloody well pay taxes on my, you know, on my wife's estate? That's really what it came down to. The other parts of the secret history of gay marriage is, you know, are that it has never been a widespread feeling among gays and lesbians that they all needed to get married. They've all been deluded, or they've been convinced that, or they've simply literally been silenced. There has been a lot of silencing, and this is the other part that I'm going to be taking up in future pieces. The extent to which majority gay and lesbian organizations have actually silenced the dissent about gay marriage. And I'm, you know, I'll stop there and I'll wait for more questions.
No, how did they? I'm curious about that. How did they silence?
There's been, over the years, a massive amount. Well, first of all, there's a lot of money involved in this.
Yes.
And money buys silencing. And I don't mean silencing as much as, you know, I'm from Chicago, so I'm not really talking about silencing as in terms of, you know, people being dragged into back rooms and having the hell beaten out of them. But
that works,
you know,
too.
Psychologically. I mean, so for instance, I'll give you, I think the best example is magazines, institutions like the New York Times, for instance. The silencing has come about in large part due to a sense of massive liberal guilt, right?
Yes.
So there's, and gays and lesbians, like the ones in HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, have learned how to work upon that guilt. So basically what happened, and I have seen this happen to me many times, is that anyone who dissents is immediately shouted down with cries of homophobia. So a lot of straight people, and I know this from experience and I know this empirically, a lot of straight people who had issues with gay marriage, for instance, whether in the straight press or in personal relationships, were basically told, if you don't support gay marriage, you are against us. I actually had someone stand up and say that at one of the debates that I was presenting at. She essentially turned around to the entire room and said, if you're not with us, you're against us, which, you know, astonishingly is exactly what George Bush once said, we might recall.
And it reflects how little
kind of silencing, right? There's also the silencing that comes about when an institution like the New York Times has a lot of gays and lesbians in its newsrooms, right? So you had the New York Times, which at one point went from being rather homophobic, would refuse to use the word, you know, only use terms like long-term companion, then shifting in the other direction because it felt so terribly guilty, and because it now had gays and lesbians like Frank Bruni, whom I write about, who dictated the politics of the New York Times. So you have, and that you have widespread across, I think, the left and liberal and progressive media, is a reluctance to touch gay marriage in any critical way because of a fear of being homophobic, of being seen as homophobic, or because, in fact, like as in the New York Times, it is filled with exactly the kinds of gays and lesbians who would not present any kind of dissent towards gay marriage. There's also the question of money. I can assure you, as an investigative journalist and as a cultural critic and as a person who's lived and worked around the nonprofit industrial complex, a lot of people have come to me and said that their organizations, which deal with, for instance, issues not related to gay marriage, like HIV/AIDS, youth queer issues, and so on, have been told very, very clearly, you have to support gay marriage. You have to provide a statement of support of some sort in this press release. Otherwise, we're going to pull our money from you. So there has been that kind of direct silencing as well. That is harder to prove. I have proof of various kinds. It's harder to prove empirically, but that's something that I'm working on.
That is... These are some issues that I have looked into very glancingly. That's how I came across your piece. I think it's incredibly important for people to understand that this is not simple. And if we want to make sure that people's rights of all kinds are defended and protected, then the whole the issue of gay marriage becomes a moot point, because people are dying of AIDS. Or if trans youth are being persecuted and beaten, even and lives have been lost, and suicide too among young people. These are huge issues, and some of the money that is flowing around needs to flow in these directions. But it does. It seems that it is easier simply to say, well, hooray for gay marriage, which indeed, of course, we do. But at the same time, some of that money, it would be good if it were directed towards issues that really affect the community in ways that are not as make such great headlines or kind of sentimental stories. Mm-hmm. So we're making things sentimental and injecting money into the whole scenario always taints the whole movement. And people too should understand that marriage is not an ancient institution. It's a relatively recent one, and it's built on, again, the religious industrial complex as a way of controlling people. So, this is not such a great thing in and of itself. If you understand its real history, that's enough for me. But I'd like, in the last few seconds that we have, to just let people know that my guest has been, of course, Yasmin Nairn. She's a co-founder of the group Against Equality. She wrote the piece, The Secret History of Gay Marriage. And she has also, her works appeared everywhere, anthologies, journals, and it's been in Captive Genders, Trans Embodiment, and the Prison Industrial Complex, Singleism, What It Is, Why It Matters, all kinds of places. And if you're not familiar with her work, I really urge listeners to find out more. Well, your final thoughts just in the last couple of seconds that we do have here.
I think that this is about, for me, it is a moment of happiness and of great depression. I'm happy that the gay marriage movement is finally over so that we can move on. But I'm also duly depressed. And I think I want to read our listeners to be cautious about what is going to happen next. We have lost so much psychic and financial energy, really, that it's and we have so many issues left. And I'm really concerned about how we're going to start working on them without the resources. And we have a long, hard road ahead of us. However, I'm also deeply optimistic because I think there's a lot of resistance as well to the gay mainstream agenda. And I just want to give a shout out to many of my friends who on Sunday, yesterday, launched a fantastic protest against the mainstream gay pride.
We're flat out of time. And we can talk more, put more on on the website. Thank you so much for your time today. My guest, of course, has been Yasmin Nair. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, June 29th, 2015. And Joe Clement, engineer the show for us today. Thanks for that. Joe Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the